The Mama Take Heart podcast with Rabrina Rettle is brought to you by Life Audio and is a part of our Faith Toolkit series. For more inspirational, faith-affirming podcasts, visit lifeaudio.com.
Welcome to Mama Take Heart, Understanding Your Gen Z Girl. I'm your host, Rabrina Rettle, and I'm here to help you be the gospel-centered, compassionate, and influential voice in your girl's life. Today, my guest is Jonathan McKee, author of over 25 books, including If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, the Amazon bestseller, The Guy's Guide to God, Girls, and the Phone in Your Pocket. He has almost 30 years of youth ministry experience and speaks to parents and leaders worldwide, all while providing free resources for parents on his website, becomingscreenwise.com. Today, we're going to talk about his newest book, Teen's Guide to Face-to-Face Connections in a Screen-to-Screen World, which he co-authored with his daughter, Alyssa McKee. Welcome, Jonathan, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's honestly my privilege, so thank you for having me.
I do want to say that your daughter, Alyssa, she describes herself as right on the cusp of being a millennial and Gen Z, but she refuses to be a stereotypical phone-obsessed youth of her generation. I know that she works with young people at a college in Southern California every day, and that she's a youth leader at her local church's high school youth group. She also says that Alyssa likes her phone, but she knows how to leave it in her pocket. So good job there. Jonathan, and I know you've already written over 25 books. So why did the two of you decide to join up and write Teen's Guide to Face-to-Face Connections in a Screen-to-Screen World together?
That's a great question because, it was interesting as I was tackling this topic. This is a topic that whenever I talk with parents, is so huge. I mean, it seems like now whenever parents come up to me and if there's a question, it's usually about this device right here. It's like, oh, my kid wants to bring this device into their bedroom at night or they're constantly looking down at their device. They won't even look up from their device. It's most of the questions have to do with screens in general. And so as I was tackling this subject, Alyssa had just a wealth of information to talk about this because being in her 20s, but not only being in her 20s, she was someone who actually kind of lived the transition. Mm-hmm. She was born literally right on that line between being a millennial and Gen Z. She's on that line. And it put her junior and senior year of high school was 2012. And a lot of people might think, well, what's so significant about 2012? But anybody that researches this stuff, that number is a huge number. And the reason why is in 2012, is the year that, first of all, that America crossed that 50% mark of carrying this thing in their pocket. That's when the majority of Americans really switched over to smartphones, 2012. 2012 is also the year that Snapchat came out. 2012 is the year Instagram became a thing. So for a girl like Alyssa, who's finishing her junior year, going on to her senior year, what she noticed is her early years of high school was that old phone where you could text and talk, but all of a sudden her latter years of high school, everything switched to social media in the back pocket. Mm. And she said that really, I think her words were, communication as we knew it changed. She said where car rides used to be full of conversation, now it was heads down because, man, you're scrolling through your social media right there. I mean, so much engrossing you in the phone, less face-to-face conversation, more screen-to-screen conversation. And even though, sure, kids texted a lot beforehand, man, there was so much now engrossed in them with this device. And she said, it just changed. And it's not, so as we kind of embarked to write this together, it was not a, hey, this thing is bad, this thing is evil, throw it away. It was, hey, can we get this thing under control a little bit? And rather than coming across as the nagging, put that thing away, it was more two of us from two different generations really trying to begin the conversation to open up the doors of dialogue about, hey, you know what? This thing's a great tool for connecting with people outside the room. when it doesn't interfere with our relationships with the people inside the room. And so that's why we wrote the book.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was very well written. I really appreciate the format, how you alternate the chapters. You write a chapter, she writes a chapter. I like the realizations that you have at the concluding and the questions that you offer to the reader. I also appreciated the two generation because I found it eye-opening and valuable. And I also admire how honest and real and authentic Alyssa is in the book. And, you know, she talks about the mistakes that she's made and the lessons that she's learned from them. And yeah, I really appreciate that. I think people, they need to know, nobody's perfect. You're going to make mistakes, but we have redemption in everything. And so the more you know, the better you do. And so, yeah, she was really good at expressing that.
Yeah, she was pretty, she got pretty vulnerable in the book. And I think that, I think the younger generation values authenticity. And I think her transparency and her vulnerability was really helpful in this book because it was kind of like, hey, you know, I like this thing too. And Instagram's been fun, but maybe here's some things I've noticed about what Instagram does to me. And I thought that was compelling when she was honest like that.
Yes, I agree. And one example is in your chapter titled Insta Gratification, Alyssa describes a particular day where she says, quote, our day had been hijacked by Instagram. We had allowed it to take us to an unhealthy places, unquote. And then she describes taking pictures on a trip that should have been fun and carefree. But instead, as Alyssa and her friends posted pics, she found herself criticizing and comparing herself. And in your book, you also talk about the research that you found regarding the effects of social media on young girls in particular. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was interesting because, and that's one thing that I think I've been hearing from readers about this book, is it's kind of a balance of testimony, of real life stories. Alyssa's saying a story like what happened to her that day. That was the day where she went home and looked at her phone and started bawling, because she had seen what it did to her that day, where they were expecting to have so much fun and they became more about posting pics than just enjoying the day. Mm-hmm. And you contrast that to later in the book when she had decided basically to take an Instagram fast. Yeah. She wasn't saying Instagram was evil or wrong, but she was like, personally, I think I want to take a break. And when she did, she tells that one story of driving down the road in a convertible, wind blowing through her hair. And she says, it was such a relief to just enjoy the moment instead of thinking, oh, wait, how can I post the moment? Let me get the perfect pic. And it's kind of cool to hear that testimony, real life stories of someone sharing their heart about that. But the book also brings to it research. And one of the fascinating pieces of research was the effects of social media on teenagers. So here you hear Alyssa share about it as someone who's there, who knows it. But then also to hear, matter of fact, a lot of people who are, you know, viewers of this podcast probably have seen the Netflix recent special, The Social Dilemma. All the interviews where all those people who created a lot of these apps and technology are kind of confessing, here's what's going on. Well, one of the people interviewed in that was Dr. Jonathan Haidt. And I quoted him in the book as well, because Dr. Jonathan Haidt and Dr. Gene Twenge both have done some fascinating research on the mental health of us all recently. And they found that with young people in particular, social media is one of those things that is really starting to affect young people. And it was interesting because, and I think young people will find this fascinating, is, you know, there's a lot of people out there saying, oh, watch out, screen time is bad. Screen time is bad. And honestly, what these two researchers did is they said, hey, let's look and see, let's really compare and find out what people are truly saying. Is all screen time bad when you're sitting watching Netflix? Is that hurt you if you're video gaming? Does that hurt you? Because a lot of people don't play those video games, it'll rot your brain, you know, and stuff. And so they're like, let's find out, is it really all that bad? And what they found out was fascinating, because all these researchers literally created an open source document, and they all piled in and said, here's what I found. Here's what I found about video games. Here's what I found about social media. Here's what I found about young, about old. And what they found was, they said, first of all, to say blanket statement screen time is bad, there's just no data that supports that. Sorry, moms and dads who are like, that will rot your brain watching TV. There are individual studies that show that, yeah, if a kid watches too much TV, that kind of laziness could cause obesity because they're not outside playing as much. So there's definitely some common sense studies like that. But when it came down to this mental health crisis, there was two things that pretty much all the researchers agreed on. And I'm summarizing here, but in short, the two things they agreed on is one, we are experiencing a mental health crisis right now. Pre-COVID, this is going into COVID. This was late 2019, early 2020. So COVID's only made things even, you know, more dire and a little more depressing. But going into COVID, we were already experiencing an absolute mental health crisis. Suicide spiked more than ever before among teen girls, specifically anxiety, depression, all this stuff off the charts. There's an 84% increase in depressive episodes, major depressive episodes among young girls in the last decade. 84%. This is stuff where researchers are scratching their heads and going, what's going on? So the first thing they all agreed on is something's going on. Something's going on. Mm-hmm. The second thing they all agreed on is when they look at all the data of screen time, not all screen time was created equal. They couldn't pin it on Netflix. They couldn't pin it on video games. But social media, specifically with young girls, there was overwhelming data that too much time on social media was affecting the mental health of young girls specifically. And they actually got specific when they said too much time, literally more than an hour or two a day of when you're on a screen that's telling you how good you are, how well you measure up, how many followers you have. And so think about this. YouTube is actually declared social media. And for a lot of young people, we live in a world where 84% of teenagers would like to be an influencer. Mm-hmm. So a young girl who might innocently want to start her own YouTube channel about putting on makeup or about her sports or whatever it is, that jumping on YouTube, how many followers do I have? Do I have any more? That pressure, mm-hmm. that pressurized environment we're creating, they're saying not more than an hour or two a day, because once that goes up, mental health starts to go down. And they all kinds of fascinating experiments. And that's one of the things we tried to open up the dialogue in the book is looking at some of those experiments where when kids actually put those screens down and minimize social media time, all of a sudden we started to see mental health go up. And it's like, wait a second, these face-to-face relationships, cultivating these face-to-face relationships is making a difference in the mental health. And so that's where we're just sitting there saying, hey, we're not saying don't have a YouTube channel. We're not saying don't be on social media, but we need to become screen wise. We need to realize that this little device is actually very powerful. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the dialogue we're trying to open up with this book.
Yes, you did a really good job in that too, and talking about how the phone can be a very powerful thing, but it can also be very dangerous. And I really like the analogies that you used in the book, the chainsaw analogy, that was really good. You just did a really good job of making it relatable. Well, people can really understand, okay, I need to look at it more than just, oh, it's just my phone and I'm just kind of hanging out on it. There can be danger involved as well as, you know, having a great time with it. And so it's just to be aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. My kids did 1 year for Lent. They gave up social media. And
wow, how'd that go?
They actually did very well. I was very surprised, but they did well.
What did you notice with them? What differences did you see?
Oh, well, there was more communication with each other. And then they were more relaxed. That's what I noticed the most, that their tension was not as high. And so I know my daughter, she'll every once in a while her thing is taking a break from Twitter because Twitter gets out of control. So she'll be like, you know what? It's time for a Twitter break.
That's right. All the drama. Get rid of the drama.
Yeah, everyone wants to have their voice heard, and it's not necessarily in a very diplomatic manner. And so it's just like, okay, you know what? I think I'm done here. I took a break for 3 months. It was supposed to be a 3 month break. I ended up on a year and a half break from Facebook. And I didn't miss it. I was like, wow, this is actually okay. It was refreshing. And it was kind of funny because some people say, oh, you didn't hear about that? I put it on Facebook. I said, yeah, you can do the old fashioned thing if you want. You can call me or you can send me a text. Texting is old fashioned now. But anyway, yeah, there's a couple of other things that I noticed too. In your book, when you talked about posting and tweeting and in the chapter, You're Fired, you provide an example of a woman who tweeted an insensitive and inappropriate joke to her very small group of followers. And the tweet went viral and the woman lost her job. How can we help our kids understand what they post, text, or tweet now can affect them in the future?
Yeah, you know, that is a theme, you know, we talk about so much. And in this book, The Teen's Guide to Face-to-Face Conversations, and also my original teen's guide book, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, we kind of keep returning to that phrase of nothing is temporary on the internet, you know, because, and it's funny, I mean, my job is a fascinating one because so often I'm out and I'll speak to parents and then I'll do school assemblies. And very often when I, go into a school, talk with the principal, then they bring me into the room and all these teenagers sitting there and I got to talk to these teenagers and stuff. There's not a school I've been at where I don't hear the story from some kid or from the principal or whatever. Every school, without exception, every school has the story, if not multiple stories, of the girl who is put pressure on by the boyfriend to send the nude pic or send the sexy pic. And she does. And eventually they break up, you know, whether a week later, a month later, a year later, whenever. And then this guy sends that pic out to all his friends or the whole school or whatever. And then this girl's ashamed and doesn't want to go to school because, oh, look at that slut or whatever, you know, as opposed to look at this guy who, you know, I've got some names for that guy too, but which we won't say on the podcast.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, you're sitting there going, this happens all the time, all the time. Remember, whenever I do school assemblies, and I'll share some of the stories, the real stories I've encountered of kids I've met and talked to who've shared these things, and kids always come up. A girl will always come up fighting back the tears, like, thank you for that story. Thank you. You know, because it's something she experienced. And there's so much regret out there. There's so much late night, a kid's got their phone in their bedroom and they post something and then they wake up in the morning like, oh my gosh, what do I, you know, and their phone is flooded. So we talked about these things in a book. And the thing, what we're trying to do with this book is we're trying to bring these conversations to the table. And in all honesty, this is the kind of book that mom, dad, grandma buys for their daughter, for their son, their granddaughter. And our hope is that it's not something you just hand them and say, hey, you should read this. But do you sit down and say, let's do breakfast once a week and talk about this? And that's why we put discussion questions at the end of each chapter, right? You know, dialogue about this, because when you read these real life stories, when you read these real life confessions from young people who've done this, or from that girl in that chapter who posted one little thing, and when she does this across the country, across the world flight, and when she lands, she was fired. You know, and she said something stupid, but, you know, boom, she would have never even fathomed. And she just wishes she could take that one tweet back ruined her life,
Right. Literally
ruined her life. And there's a lot of young people out there who can attest to a picture that ruined their life or whatever. You asked specifically, what can we as mom and dads do? First, open up the doors of dialogue. A lot of us, we don't know what to say. That's why we wrote the book. It gives you a springboard for these conversations. Get the book, have these conversations. So open up those conversations. That's connection. I always think connection before correction. Mm. But there are some boundaries. There are some things we can do. And one thing is, hey, if your kids have this device, that's okay. But one thing that every doctor agrees on is no screens in the bedroom. And you would avoid a lot of that drama if kids don't have social media in their bedroom all night long. So get rid of the screens out of the bedroom. I would give, you know, this is the holiday time, you know, Christmas, a lot of And there's so many. The average age that a young person gets a smartphone in America is 10 years old. You can't even be on social media till you're 13 without lying about your age. Mm. And there are so, when I go on a middle school campus, I meet 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, drama, and they're on social media, and their parents are like, "Yeah, my kid," and they're talking about their 11 or 12-year-old, was on, you know, Twitter and was on Instagram and was on, you know, TikTok all last night. I don't know what to do about it. Well, first of all, they shouldn't even be on social media because they had to lie about their age. They shouldn't have even got a device yet. They shouldn't have it in their bedroom. There are things we can do, people, as moms and dads. And I know the pressure's on, okay? This is easier said than done. You know, I'm sitting here removed saying this. Your 12-year-old is coming home and saying, "Mom, I'm the only 12-year-old without a phone," and they're not lying, yep. Okay? They're not. Statistically, you look at the numbers, 11 years old is the first time where you cross the 50% mark for literally an 11-year-old. More 11-year-olds have smartphones in their pocket than don't. So when your kid comes home and says, "All my friends have smartphones," chances are that 70 to 80 something percent of their friends do have smartphones. And you probably don't want to say that. Only 80% of your friends have. That doesn't work. But it's one of those things where it's kind of like if your kid, you know, if your 12-year-old came up to you and said, "Mom, can I please drive the SUV? Please, can I have keys, you know, to the Pathfinder or for some of us to the Escalade," you know, that's, you know, you can't, no matter how much your 12-year-old begs, you're like, "Hey, you know, the answer isn't no, it's just not yet. All right. You know, right. Soon, you know," and that's what we've kind of got to do with screens and social media. We've got to delay, not deny. We got to delay.
Yes.
So, that, you know, that's something as parents, let's begin these conversations. This isn't just a no, this is a let's talk about it.
Yes.
And when your 13-year-old wants it, you know, you sit there and, you know, and you know, say, "Okay, I'll tell you what, you know, when you're done with this book, we'll talk about this book. And when you're done, then we'll talk about you getting a device."
That's a good idea. Yes. My kids had that T9 phone for a long time. The phone that Alyssa talks about, how you have to keep punching the number to get to the letter that you really want.
Yeah.
They had one of those for a really long time. So yeah, I'm a big believer also in delay. And I mean, what's the rush? I wanted my kids to be kids for as long as possible. And yeah. So, I did a little delay there too. I think my daughter she was probably in the second semester of her eighth grade year is when she got a phone. And yeah. And that was delay for her.
"All my friends have phones, Mom."
Yeah, exactly. Well, another thing I wanted to talk about, and which I'm so glad you mentioned this, because I work for an anti-sex trafficking organization.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that your book provides young people with a list of grooming behaviors that predators frequent. And I wonder if you can share with us what some of those behaviors that our kids and the parents need to recognize.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And we spent, I think, a couple chapters in here talking about that. And it's neat because we literally provide a list. Here's some of these things you should look at. And look at that. That's cool. We each got our books. We're like, yes, let's see. So what page are you on? What page is
this
list
is on there? Page 148. And
there you go. That's it. All right, let's look.
The chapter is chapter 23.
For those of you with your face-to-face books, please turn to hymn number 148 and we will look. Yeah. Oh yeah. There we go. Yeah. This is the chapter about the predators. And the thing that's so fascinating is think about this real quick, because again, we live in a world where 8 out of 10 young people want to be a social influencer. So what I've seen, and the reason we list these things here is for young people to recognize, is I've kind of seen a perfect storm of opportunity for predators. And here's why. I've seen three things happening right now. Right now, social media is more readily available than it ever has been before. It's in most people's back pockets. And because of COVID, we are now actually trying to get more screens in the hands of young people.
Yes.
With good intentions. They need to learn.
Right.
But we don't know what it's like to turn those screens off when the school day is done.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
That's the first thing is more screens than ever before. Second of all, because 8 out of 10 young people want to be influencers, they have changed their profiles to public more than ever before. Mm-hmm. Where they used to be set on private, now we've got, I need as many followers as possible. I got to get followers. So if I got to get followers, that means I don't want to have them to have to ask me. I just want them to be able to add. So public. So profiles are more public, which means that now Ted Bundy jumps on your daughter's page. No problem. Doesn't even need, you know, permission, right? Just boom, I'm on there. That's right. Yes. And he's like, you know, right. And so we've got that. And then self-esteem has never been so low. Mm. So think of those three factors colliding: self-esteem low, everybody on social media bearing everything with no blocks whatsoever on who can look at them. Because of that, we need to start thinking about the fact that predators have access to us and stuff. So that's why I listed them. And as the old guy, I put on my glasses, I listed a bunch of things that we got to think about. Now, some of these grooming behaviors, yes. Like predators often giving excessive compliments or even offering to send gifts or money, you know, trying to find out your personal information. I play volleyball too. You know, what school do you play for? You know, it is interesting as I see the one here about promising a stress-free, exciting, you know, life. It is funny how much they'll kind of try to drive that wedge in the relationship between them and the parent. They'll be yes. like, oh, your dad doesn't let you do that. Oh, you know, I would never treat you like that.
Right.
You know, I would be there, you know, whatever. And that's why I told real life stories in the book. Like, I think the story of, I think Uncle Jack, I remember changing his name. I think I changed his name to Uncle mm-hmm. Jack. I remember mm-hmm. when the kid told me that story. That was a frightening story right. about the kid who met the kid who wasn't a kid.
Right.
Right. You know, and he kept talking about, oh, I love Uncle Jack. Da, da, da. And the one time she snuck out of the house and don't worry, my Uncle Jack will pick you up. And guess who picked her up? The guy she'd been talking to all along, the right. old dude, Uncle Jack, who was posing mm-hmm. like the teenager. And this stuff happens all the time.
Yes,
so, you know, I know we're running out of time, but this is just one of those important things where we need to open up this dialogue with young people. We need to start these conversations. And this isn't you just put that phone away and because I said so.
Right.
It's more of, hey, guess what? You know, we need to educate our kids to become screen wise.
Yes.
And if we engage in this kind of conversation, you know, this is going to help them have the ammo, have the knowledge, slowly develop the wisdom with their screens. And so something we need to not only teach, this something we need to model. So I would say it's big time. I'd say, man, be praying, you know, and I know for me, when I look back and you'll see some of my parenting books are about regret. If I had a parenting do-over, one of the things I regret is that I didn't model this more in my own life, that I didn't honestly give God some areas of my life that I needed to fix with impatience and intolerance and I could see how that affected my kids, mm-hmm. you know? So some of us, it starts with us, starts right. with what we're doing with our own devices. And maybe we need to start, you know, turn our own device more and tuning into what our kids are, you know, tuning into their lives. So
yes,
open up those doors of dialogue, model this.
I agree. Yes. I think that it is important that they know that you are for them and that you love them and you want just the best for them. And so when they think you're trying to stop them from having fun, I know there's certain things in the world that I'm trying to protect you from. And I love you very much. And I'm just trying to allow you to have the best life possible and the best that God has for you. I agree. That is very important.
Well, and as we dialogue with them too, dialogue is a two-way conversation, not a monologue, you know, because we could say those exact words you just said, which are beautiful. But it would just be a speech and it's like conversation over, as opposed to asking them questions and saying, how do you feel about this? You know, what do you think? And we need to listen to them. And there's a lot of, well, I'll tell you one thing that scares them. Bless you. You know, a lot of predators are swooping in because nobody is listening to young people. Mm-hmm. And a predator becomes that listener. We as mom and dad need to be that listener. We need to empathize. How do you feel about this? What do you think? And as our kid is sitting there going, I'm the only one in my classroom without a phone, you know, being able to think about some of those things, you know, because, you know, that's something that maybe we don't we never considered what it was like to be the only kid there mm-hmm. that's teased because they got a dumb phone, you know, mm-hmm. instead of a smartphone mm-hmm. and stuff. That doesn't mean, you know, give your 10-year-old a smartphone, but mm-hmm. we need to empathize and be able to listen to them. And this needs to be a two-way conversation.
That's true. Jesus did ask a lot of questions. I highly encourage you all to pick up a copy of Teen's Guide to Face-to-Face Connections in a Screen-to-Screen World. The chapters are short, readable, and relatable, and it is a great read for you and your teen, as Jonathan stated, which is funny you said that, because one thing I would do with my daughter with when I had an interest in something like this, I would buy two books. I have to buy two books because my daughter does not like to share books with me because I write in my books and I dog ear, and she likes to keep her books pristine. What I would do though, I would give her one, I would take one, and we would read them simultaneously. And as you had mentioned, we would meet up once a week and then we would discuss certain chapters in the book. And so that's what I did with her. She's 19 now, but when she was younger and kind of growing, that's what we did. We would meet up once a week, we'd read a book or, you know, a Bible study or whatever, and we just kind of discuss it. And then that Great. Helps you get insight on what's going on in their world and how they're processing things. And yeah, I found that helpful. So hopefully that is something you can do with your girl. And Jonathan, thanks again so much for taking time to help us guide our children to make screen-wise decisions and encourage face-to-face connections.
Oh, thank you. It's been a fun dialogue, and let's let it continue.
Yes, please. Well, you can get more information. Jonathan provides free resources on his website, becomingscreenwise.com. The link is in the show notes. And remember, God is for you. You are not alone. And with His Spirit, you are filled with courage and strength of purpose. So don't fret, Mama. Instead, take heart.
Mama Take Heart is a production of Life Audio and the Salem Web Network. If you liked what you just listened to, would you take a second and leave us a rating in your favorite podcast app? It really does help more people like you find our show. This podcast is produced by me, Kelly Givens, and Steven Sanders, with executive oversight by Stephen McGarvey. You can find more podcasts like this over at lifeaudio.com.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.